Hello, dear listeners. Are you curious what the Wrong Boys have been up to lately? There's a lot going on behind the scenes. And for those of you who are just so curious, who just can't live with yourself without knowing what we've been up to, we invite you to come and listen to our new Patreon series.
Behind the Secret Seriously Wrong Curtain, a exclusive insider's look at the making of Seriously Wrong projects and so on. You see the shadowed back of our two heads as we talk about classified Seriously Wrong related project information. And if you hear that shuffling noise, that's the curtains being moved out of the way for you to get behind them. And then you can see
you're coming backstage. Coming back with us. So, tiny bit of spoilers, just to wet your beak as to what's behind the curtain. We've been working on a new library socialist project, and we have three little episodes kind of talking about the development of that. And then the most recent behind the curtain episode is talking about Sean and his involvement in local Vancouver politics in the upcoming mayoral election, where there's some exciting stuff happening. So yeah, if you want to get behind the curtain and hear about all of it, hear about what's going on, help support the show, help support us, help support these projects we're working on and this podcast that you're listening to, head over to our Patreon, sign up. It's just $6 a month. You'll get access to this little series we're doing. You'll get access to our entire archive, all of our episodes, all of our bonus episodes. It's all there up on Patreon. And we couldn't appreciate it more for those of you who are rushing out to do that right now. And for those of you who previously rushed out to do it in the past, you're all beautiful geniuses and you're all making the show possible. So yeah, thanks for that, and we will continue on with this. And I'll just say, you know, we recently were bragging about how we're not just a podcast, we're an audio luxury experience. And I just want to say forthrightly up front, this, what you're about to listen to, this is a podcast. And if you want to know why, check out the Patreon series, Behind the Curtain. Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Seriously Wrong podcast.
Seriously Wrong podcast. Welcome to it. We are your humble hosts, each more humble than the last.
My name's Aaron.
And my name's Sean.
That is Sean.
One of us is short and one of us is tall. One of us is thin. One of us is fat.
Aaron and Sean, Seriously Wrong. It's not exactly a rhyme, but on and on. If you kind of slide the vowel sounds a bit, you can make it work.
Yeah, we're podcasting's original odd couple, and we're back for an all-new episode.
That's kind of true, in a way.
In many ways.
You could probably find some podcast that's longer lived than ours and is an odd couple, but probably not that many. Out of all podcasts, we're probably one of the most longest lived.
The longest? Yeah, in terms of long-lived podcasting odd couples, I mean, a lot of these guys end up at each other's throats. They split, they have their different shows, they say there wasn't a fight, they say everything's cool, or they have a Patreon dispute. Nothing like that over here, because the other thing is that we're also podcasting's original even couple on many issues, many important issues.
Yeah, like how odd are we, really? Like, odd couple, usually, we're not constantly at each other's throats or anything.
One of us is clean, one of us is messy, one of us is serious, one of us is goofy.
Yeah, I don't think any of those apply that much.
I think you're cleaner than me.
Yeah.
We're both less clean than many people they've met.
Yeah. My apartment is fairly tidy, but clean. I don't know if I would call it clean. I don't know the last time I wiped stuff down, or this carpet hasn't been cleaned in 13 years. People wear shoes in here. It's not like
it's part of the vibe,
but it's like an office carpet floor. It just exists. You vacuum every once in a while and that's it.
Yeah, stuff is tidy, but there's some, like, if you don't mind me saying, home design fundamentals that are not being followed.
That's true.
Things are sorted in a coherent way, but not in a magazine spread, like an Airbnb listing kind of way.
It looks intentional, but not like super
imagined, dear
clean. Like, anyway,
I think this place is, it's only like 2% barn, and I think at my worst my office gets like maybe 5% barn.
Right.
I'm not proud of that. It's more of a confession.
I usually also tidy before you come a bit.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So you see it at its little peaks throughout the day.
Just to be clear, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's a humble and decent accommodation and one of my favorite neighborhoods. You know, I'm jealous.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great place. They started allowing cats recently, and I think it's been really great for mice not being in the building.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord.
Landlord. Thanks to the Lord of the land.
They've brought a benevolent offering to the tenanted masses. You may keep companionship. And like,
return. No dogs, just cats.
Yeah, well, let's not be insane. And then they they get on their carriage and clip, clop, clip, and they do a little cupped Queen Elizabeth wave. And they're like, I'll see you soon for my free money because I already own a building, which is a place that money comes from. Anyways, welcome to the Seriously Wrong podcast. We are Sean and Aaron, your humble hosts. Podcasting's original odd and even couple and Canada's longest running comedy podcast. Fact check that, but it's actually genuinely a possibility. Independent,
at least. It seems extremely likely. Yeah, there might be like some CBC podcast, but even
exactly.
Then, like,
I mean, did they publicly fund it now? That
start before us? We were.
It's not a true podcast. If you're a media and radio company doing something you call a podcast, that's like a different genre. No offense. Anyway, so this week at Seriously Wrong, we're
going woke.
Yeah, we're going woke again. It's like woke to call it. Like,
yeah, it's even woker, even more. And
woke 2.0. I mean, I think it's time. We got hit with that wave of anti-woke, and I think we should investigate what happened, I think, just from both a legal and cultural perspective in terms of these like bot armies, dark money, strange election activity, yada, yada. We don't have to get into it now. Tech surveillance, micro-targeting, and so on. We need to do some sort of large-scale investigation on that anti-woke moment. It was clearly just a blip, a meaningless blip, and it's time for us to double down. That's why we call it Woke 2.0, because we want to emphasize that we're open to revisions.
Yeah, there's going to be a stable 2.1 alpha. And a 3 and a...
And in retrospect, we can say Woke 1.0 in terms of the public discourse of woke, not the original woke pre-beta, which we could talk about later, the root of the woke term. In African-American communities. But when the general culture took on wokeness, woke 1.0, it was stable. But I think it's also there was lessons learned. And in many ways, it's time to get more woke. And in other ways, it's time to soften a little wokeness around the edges in a way that's achieving a woke 2.0 balance that is maximally liberatory. And it's something we just have to start negotiating. So we just want to put the opening bid out there as Canada's longest running comedy podcast.
Yeah, forcing it into these numbered versions and, you know, like software update stuff, it can get a bit messy. But
we don't do it because it's easy. We do it because it's important.
Yeah, it's important for software because you have to like package a specific code or whatever. But like, I think the phenomenon of what's happening here is that social movements wane and come back and the people involved in them feel more and less like there's possibility, but they don't really go away for the most part. That's like the meme with like the lost cause, right? It's like the people still fighting the Civil War a century later or whatever. Like whatever lost cause Civil War 13.0 they're on, they're still fighting that one. And even woke, you could, you know, maybe this is actually woke 15.0, but it was called something else before. Oh, but anyway,
if we wanted to be technical about
it, does feel like there's a real moment now where people with broadly left-wing politics are feeling like we've grasped something that makes sense. I think it's partially coming out of that anti-woke moment you're talking about. Like, people were talking about the vibe shift and like, oh, you know, woke is over. Everyone's saying the R word again. Trump got elected again. It was like, that was this dispiriting moment where the worst thing that people could imagine in America happening happened. And then all the worst people who love that were celebrating. And then that moment wanes, and all the people who were horrified by that moment are like, wait, all this woke stuff actually does make a lot of sense. The things that woke 1.0 was criticized for was often like, yeah, real things that happened, but like not the point. And I feel like a lot more people just get the point more, where it's like, oh, this isn't about like getting mad at everybody who assumed your gender or whatever. Like, that wasn't a real thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that was the perception. The downfall of woke 1.0 is this extremely effective marketing campaign against it. And, you know, we've adapted.
Backed by billionaire right wing freaks. Look it up. Please do an independent investigation. I always say to the authorities on that.
Yeah. I mean, Elon bought Twitter and turned it in. Like, it just, a lot of it was very out in the open what was happening there.
Yeah, sure. Interesting. Here's a side story. On Twitter, one of the prominent trolls in right-wing Twitter politics, the person who was pissing me off on Twitter flipped up who they were. A handful of people were able to pull together documents they passed on to me showing that this person is actually literally working in dark ops on the internet for, you know, they advertise for military application or military style strategies, but it's almost certainly like communication firm employees that are posting extremely far right shit on behalf of someone to attack left wing activists in Vancouver.
Right.
But yeah, before we start innovating for Woke 2.0, I just want to say, like, the banner comes down behind mission accomplished. We're crossing our arms back to back. Woke 1.0 was a success.
Absolutely.
Sometimes the best victory is one that slides by silently. And it really is something that we have right-wing politicians talking about their lived experience, criticizing the privilege of their opponents.
Well, yeah, I think one of the biggest strengths of Woke 1.0 and why it's managed to bounce back so quickly is that a lot of it just makes sense. The fact that someone who has lived experience has a particular perspective on the matter that's worth something is just like obviously true. And so conservatives notice that and they're like, oh, well, I can weaponize this or whatever from our views as well.
So yeah, there's been a total woke cultural victory across the spectrum, mission accomplished. And now it's time to get into the next phase, doing more of the work of total human liberation. Now with an understanding that generally speaking, most people are aware of the premise of something like structural racism, the subjugation, oppression, and violence against women, the inequality between the first world and the developing world, you know, the nature of like capitalist markets and bosshood as a system of rapacious exploitation that is the cause of things in your life, like high prices and landlords and cars that break down and so on. Now, not everyone agrees with all this stuff. Like, not everyone's in hook, line, and sinker the way that us true woke warriors are. And
our
listeners out there, we got every badge on the fucking Boy Scout sash when it comes to wokeness. It's like, yes, animals too. And yes, you know, that's where we're coming from here. That's what Woke 2.0 is like, is what I'm saying. So now that everyone knows that this is the game, this is the scene, this is the stakes, we got to bring them up the ladder with us. And that's what Woke 2.0 is about.
Yeah, I can't remember where the term came from, but it's also like associated with being like more edgy and being woke.
Dark woke?
Yeah.
Yeah, dark woke is...
Dark woke, that's I've part seen of bringing used it. That's like interchangeably sometimes with Woke 2.0. But like, yeah, I think there's people are just also like understanding these things better. You feel a lot more comfortable with them. And when you feel comfortable with these kinds of topics, it's easier to like joke about them in ways that don't piss people off. Don't do anything that's genuinely shitty in your joke. I don't know. This is a personal experience for me. But, you know, if you follow this podcast over 14 years, I've learned a lot about wokeness over the years. We're very baby wokes.
It's true.
In 2014, when we started this thing.
There's an early episode where you can hear, I think, you accidentally misgendered Chelsea Manning.
It wasn't an accident. I said both names. I was like, this person, formerly known as this person. And then I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's just helpful. So everyone knows who we're talking about. Because I had no idea.
And I got baby woke triggered. I had like a full body somatic response. Like, right. I was like, we got to look this up before we post that. Should we really? So on that front, and like the embodied body experience of woke 1.0, I think it's one of the potential liberatory paths we might want to chart out here. And like, how do you feel it in your body when people are talking about the ideas that are needed to liberate society? It's a really fundamental question. And so woke 1.0 and our mission that we were all drafted into and we successfully delivered the goods, part of it was that discomfort and learning kind of meme or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's something too that trauma, emotional experiences that you can't process, like overwhelming experiences of like distraught discomfort and just being unable to, like, this is mildly traumatic experiences is what we're talking about here. But in general, traumatic experiences are like learning events where your brain's making connections to avoid danger. Mm-hmm. And so maybe just woke 1.0 making people in some ways like giving birth to its own reaction through the level of agitation that was involved at times. Maybe it's like a necessary sort of, it's like a necessary evil in like a hard-minded revolutionary sense or something like that. Anyways, the past is the past. I'm not here to litigate it or condemn anyone, only to pick up where we left off and continue the mission. But remember that viscerally listening back to that later too, and just hearing that whole, like me about someone being, don't get me wrong, I care about respecting people's pronouns and chosen name and so on. But I didn't as much then actually. When I had that response, like part of this stress fear was how new it was and like not feeling I don't know the boundaries or it's not my place or whatever, but also like, I think we can't, it's like, and it's like,
we're speaking
in one voice here in the show in a way and like that whole, I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, because my memory of that incident.
It's an early incident.
Because I remember... Yeah, it wasn't until like months, years later that I was like, oh, yeah, that's actually like a thing you probably shouldn't do. Because at the time I was like, oh, great, we've got that base covered. Sean mentioned that some people don't like that. But yeah, I just like didn't get it. And then later you have this reaction of like cringing at yourself for doing this thing that was like, it's actually not that hard. People know who you're talking about.
Yeah, the stakes of that kind of quote unquote mistake or stepping out of like the bounds in terms of in real practical real world woke, like our day-to-day woke lives, the stakes on that shit are not that high. Like,
oh yeah, no,
sometimes at most, yeah, it's like the familiarity to it. I think it allows room for the irreverence, but it also allows it to not be an emotional experience to be like, they're they pronouns, but my brain keeps on doing this stupid thing. And you can just live with that being one of the things you work on and be conscious of.
Oh, yeah. That happened to me when we recorded the bonus episode we just put out. It was talking about someone who's non-binary. I used the wrong pronouns and then you used the right pronouns after. And I noticed in editing, and I already knew that before we recorded, but I'd forgotten. And then, yeah, I just cut out all the pronouns out of my question when I edited it. Because it worked well enough.
That's a super woke 2.0 maneuver too, what happened there, which is like, it's not even, I wasn't trying to stick it to you or correct you or be like, they, Aaron, I was looking at you, asshole, piece of shit, didn't remember. But just very casually at the next opportunity, just using the correct pronoun and then just like grooving from there. Mm-hmm. And then if you give a shit about it, which... most of us decent people do.
Yeah.
You get it the next time and then you get in the pattern of it and eventually you stop thinking about it. But sometimes there's just like kind of sea legs of wokeness when a new woke thing is coming by and you haven't hard-coded your brain to go they mode all the time.
And like my emotional experience of it was so different than I feel like it would have been when I was still feeling very self-conscious about not being perfect about everything like that. Where this time I was like, oh yeah, even if this had gone out, if it had been live somewhere, we don't do live things, but if we did, I don't think I would have felt that crazy about it. So I was like, oh yeah, I can just smooth this through editing. I thought about re-recording the question, but I was like, oh no, this works. And then, because I didn't want to like put it out with the wrong ones in there, but It just I made a little mistake and it's fine. I'm fixing it in editing and we're good to go.
It's almost like, I feel like there's a category for things in life that are suboptimal. They don't quite reach mistake. There's no hard feelings if, I don't know, for example, someone is really coming to your house, they're really sweating and they hug on you, they sweat on you. I made a mistake feels like heavy in a way that, like, maybe it could happen at a really bad time. You're wearing your antique great grandmother's wedding dress and looking at yourself in the mirror.
And it's very dirty sweat. You were somewhere dusty.
Exactly.
So there's like a lot of dust clinging to it.
That would reach mistake threshold and maybe even, you know, compensation, social compensation, maybe not necessarily financial, but trying to make it up to someone.
At least pay for dry cleaning.
Pay for dry cleaning if appropriate. Yeah. I love the phrase, make it up to someone. It's such a, if you break it down word by word, I don't really fully understand. It's like one of those combination of words that make it up to someone, up to.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not up to unless you do something for me. You need to make that.
I think of it as almost like a money metaphor, or like you've done something wrong, so you're in debt, you're down. In your sort of relationship up down of who's contributed or done the right thing, or make it up is like, let's even things out. I did something wrong and that's down. So the making it up is to even out again.
Yeah.
Right the wrong. Yeah.
I think of it being the wrong itself in my, right. I don't really break it down word by word. It's more, I have it like conceptually.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking it through now. I think of the it as the deficit that the wrong created.
Right.
And you're making that up.
Yeah, yeah. Like making someone whole is another language. Completion of the circuit of wrongdoing.
But yeah, I guess it depends what you mean by it. If mistake is reserved for like serious things or, you know, it's like a small mistake. Not the smallest of mistakes, but not like the biggest of mistakes. I've never met anyone who, especially someone who's non-binary, who probably gets misgendered a lot based on people don't assume you're non-binary on meeting you almost ever, that if you correct yourself, it's all good and nobody cares.
Yeah, I had an experience once where I asked someone what their pronouns were. I guess I was feeling in a woke mood, you know, and so don't always
do
that.
The moment was right.
The moment was right. Yeah, the right pronoun asked at the right time for the right reasons. And they're he, him, assigned male at birth. I just kind of assumed based on their haircut. And their earrings and stuff. I'm sorry if that's too woke 2.0, if that's getting to woke 3.0 territory to be that explicit. But the seemed like a safe bet. I mean, I've been hanging out with lots of cool, culturally engaged people on the gender spectrum. I felt like super embarrassed afterwards. That part of it too was they were like, they actually go by their pronouns now, called it. But
you just knew before they did. I see.
Yeah, I can spot a they-them egg from a mile away. that's another funny aspect of the story. But I felt so embarrassed.
Yeah, having asked and then...
It wasn't that they corrected me in any way, but they were like, what? Like, they were like, what are you asking? Like, what? They were like totally confused. It was a question that they didn't usually get.
Right.
I guess I probably do that too if someone... Like, no one's ever asked me my pronouns in my life. And they've always got it right enough.
I've been asked it on forms.
Forms, yeah.
Yeah.
Other woke than ass that. Forms always asking me for my pronouns and my ethnicity and stuff.
Yeah.
Woke ass form. Why do you care? Forms should be colorblind.
Yeah. Pronoun blind.
How we get here? Oh, yeah. That was a visceral emotional experience across my woke normalization, woke 1.0 normalization period that I just came to mind. Also, the embarrassment of trying and failing, like when it feels really high stakes. And, you know, someone or something got into your head that this really matters and that you're out of your depth.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it for me, feeling like what feels new about this wave of woke is, and not just me, a lot of people who talk about this stuff or who interact on these topics and things, it feels a lot more like people are just comfortable with it in a way that wasn't true 10 years ago, and in a way that, because, yeah, you just like, you can't keep dealing with these things popping up every now and then, like you making little mistakes or whatever, these awkward moments, and not just start to get comfortable with these topics and with doing, like, you're just like, it's normal now. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And then also, like, there's so many opportunities over the last, I mean, I guess we put some effort into it, but I also feel like the more that you understand the stakes and the reality of systemic misogyny and are able to, like, recognize it peeking its head into your life or in media and stuff. And like, part one of the big things that we pulled off in that grand mission, Woke 1.0, is like bringing a media analysis that is capable of, for example, analyzing depictions of violence or sex or whatever for its character and its relationship to our society and history, which is pretty like important, I think, for lack of a better term, spiritually, to be able to like, yeah, ascertain whether the media you're consuming is horrifically violent in ways that you might not be able to see at first.
Right.
I feel liberated by that knowledge. It has helped me to keep bad shit out of my life. Yeah. Understanding the stakes, being able to learn about the history of gender oppression or learn about the history of the transatlantic slave trade or learning about the history of anti-Semitism and also the impacts of these things and seeing so many different examples, the way that these things unfold across society to create these unequal outcomes. But it's also not just like, Woke 1.0 wasn't just about that. We pulled off like the shit's out there in a way that you can tap into right now, which is like part of the political moment that we're in.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of the base has been shored up and now you can actually build on it. Yeah, I think a lot of the uncertainty people felt around Woke 1.0 was like, yeah, feeling like there's landmines everywhere and you don't know if you're going to say the wrong thing. And I think that's still an experience a lot of normies might have dealing with these topics. But people who've been enmeshed in it for this long are now like, don't feel that way anymore. And we're like, oh, we can build a organization, build a campaign, build a movement. We can do things built on foundations of wokeness and feel stable in it because we get it. Like there's a lived knowledge of...
Yeah, we've developed a lot of elegant solutions to deal with many of the common situations where the interpersonal sparks can fly around wokeness. A lot of it's developed organically. And there's also been a lot of boundary testing in terms of people trying out different things. I'm thinking especially in like the different dark woke trial balloons across the woke period, if you understand what I'm talking about. Like, because there's a lot of stuff, like, I guess we haven't been explicit about it, of what the weirdness was of woke, but like Woke 1.0, which is now done, so we can criticize it openly. Woke 2.0, we're now patriots too. We'll defend to the death. We'll pretend doesn't have shortcomings and like any good patriot. So there was like the, it's not my job to educate you, like relishing in discomfort or that kind of philosophical cluster that had its life at the beginning, that also, to give them credit, like it is true, it's not their job to educate people, but the best way to not educate someone is to not even say that much. Time it's also just not that hard to be like, look it up on Wikipedia because I don't want to explain it. That's a reasonable ask. You know where you could learn about that? A book at your local library, but I gotta run.
Yeah, it's not my job to educate you is just like a suboptimal response to somebody who is typically, it was an imagined usually to be a response against someone who was like in bad faith, just asking questions, jacking off or whatever, like just
J-A-Q.
Not really interested in learning, but like making you type big responses to all of their like leading questions or whatever. But there was a lot of friendly fire there to people who are genuinely confused about topics, being like having this first interaction with someone who understands woke stuff, being them being like, fuck you for asking me to explain myself. And yeah, that's just not a good first impression or whatever. And it's not a good way to get good ideas out into the public.
Yeah, it was stigmatized pretty early on too. A lot of the weird things that we're moving on from, you know, they had a certain life, especially in the early phases or in certain subcultures, and it was real. Like, it's not my job to educate you is something that real people, some of which that I still know today in some form, said to me at some point in this process. But like, I don't generally see them say that anymore. I can't remember the last time I've seen anything like that said by anyone with any sincerity. Mm-hmm. So woke was like a self-correcting system. At least we give credit for that. And then in the right wing perception of woke 1.0, it's a sampling bias of individual incidents. If you're talking about the whole of the planet or even the whole of the English speaking world or whatever, every instance of someone being unprincipled about social justice in a way that's creating some sort of social weird issue where you watch the video and you're not cheering for the person who's woker. And that was like a whole internet industry for a minute. What was misrepresented by this media is kind of like foundational to the ideas of trying to tackle all of these intertwined injustices in a way that even related to the way that we looked at how we spoke and what media we read and how we related to each other in the day-to-day life. Those videos rarely show the real problems. Like someone getting upset about something that happens to them that it relates to like trauma that they have is, I don't know, they could do something fucked up or they could do something that is genuinely funny. Most of these videos are not in that scenario. Like it's most of this kind of like cheer. Anyways, my point is that most of the time they're right. Like most of the time they're right in some way, or like it's valid to feel that way. Maybe it's an extreme reaction or whatever. Just thinking of different random videos that were passed around mostly 6 years ago.
Hey, there was a real rash of like SJW. I feel like SJW compilation videos are like 11 years old now. I associate those with 2015.
Yeah, around the first Trump election was definitely a wave of that. That's where it was like being pushed by YouTube and stuff a lot.
Yeah. The alt-right rabbit hole YouTube stuff was big at that time. A lot of what happened is minor, like weird social things where people are feeling out boundaries of the online space or, yeah, like it's not my job to educate you or whatever. Is not ideal. It's not the end of the world. There is a truth to it. But I feel like the references to it lasted way longer than the actual wave of it happening.
Absolutely.
And the conservative, like keeping it alive, lasts 10 times as long. Same thing with did you assume my gender? Like, I'm sure someone has said that for real at some point. But for the most part, I've never heard anyone seriously make an argument or even like a blog post or a YouTube video of like, this is why you should never assume someone's gender ever. I don't think that's a real position, but it's a great reaction meme. It's like,
it is, but I don't think there's that many like,
there's a real position of like in a gender abolished future, it would be ideal. Or in like corporate settings, we should do a pronoun circle, or in activist circles, we should do a pronoun circle. But like day-to-day life, never in the world should you ever assume someone's gender. I'm sure people think that, but I've never come across it.
Actually, it's one of the, I'm wondering if you talk about it, then people will take that position for fun, if nothing else, or to test their own boundaries.
Right.
But if you don't talk about it, the de facto position is what we have. The de facto woke 2.0 position is that in a practical sense, in a lot of people's lives, a lot of the time, they're assuming genders and it works out quite well for most people most of the time. But it's very hard to overturn that. The effort that I might spend in trying to overturn this myself with no consensus or backup might be better used in other parts of gender liberation. I feel like that just is kind of like the emergent property of actually changing that being just a visibly steep hill to climb. I did hear and see that at least at a point from people, but they weren't like diehard about it. And it was pretty clear that that front wasn't going to be where the war was won.
Yeah, it feels like more of a thought experiment of what a more liberated world would be like rather than a thing that you would actively get angry at some random person. Like, you know, I'm thinking about all these comics or like,
yeah,
people still do it on social media. Like, did you just assume my gender? Because they'll be like, oh, you're a white man or whatever. And the conservative person will be like, oh, did you just assume my gender? Because in their mind, this was a big, huge thing the left was always doing. But like, I feel like I've seen it hundreds, thousands of times from conservatives. And yeah, like if someone lets you know what their pronouns are, you should use them. And if you use the wrong ones unthinkingly and you get corrected, just be like, oh, my bad. As long as you're not doing it maliciously or intentionally trying to harass someone, everyone is like fine with that. We're all doing our best out here, you know?
Yeah. No, and similarly, it's like, I think there's other things on the injustice spectrum. Quote unquote, speaking from a place of privilege. in a way that accidentally speaks like over someone or leaves out some obvious thing or says something stupid. Whoa, black people got the right to vote in this year. They should have got the right to vote way before that. And it's like, oh, I just accidentally said that black people should be without a vote for any period because I was just unthinkingly, right. How did it take so long? Instead of asking this is a real story. This is a real modified story I witnessed recently, but it was also caught in real time of like, oh, wait, no, everyone should have always had the right to vote. Regardless of their race.
It should never have been that way to begin with.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's the same type of like the microaggression type stuff too. And like discussion about microaggression, it's got a life in the right wing way beyond what it ever was as like a social convention. But it was and remains a tool of analysis. And it's one of the things that it covers is like unthinkingly stepping on people's toes along the lines of power in a society that's deeply unequal and unfair, and the moral importance of trying to avoid that, which is, I don't know why that's, I also teared up earlier today thinking about justice, but that's like policing microaggressions or whatever to the degree that it ever happened. I understand the fear of it, but it's also just like in practice, it's so chill in woke 2.0 and dark woke. You know, it's so chill. It's cool, man. Who could possibly dodge all these missiles? Yeah, we understand that not everyone remembers the name of everyone they meet. They might not remember the pronouns of everyone they meet. People aren't tuned in all the time to like the different levels of inequality and how you could say something as a man that is in some subtle way oblivious to what the comparison between being a man and a woman is like in a society that's like structurally misogynistic by accident. And you're not a bad guy. You don't have to feel it in your back. You don't have to be like, and you don't have to like try to play it off cool. I think that's actually the more I'm thinking about this, of like, what is actually the thing from woke 1.0 that we're trying to get past? It's not the crazy activist. It's not, it went too far and we're going to reel it back or something. It was like the body feeling and like the agitation and like the...
Yeah, being confronted with, for the first time, with the fact that you're not perfect. Where is that from? Is that Mr. Rogers, yeah. It, like, I always thought I wasn't misogynist, but maybe there are some misogynist ideas in my head from the culture. The first time it comes up, you feel like someone's calling you a bad person for something you didn't do and can't control. And maybe your reaction is to feel like guilty or beat up on yourself about it. Maybe your reaction is to be like, no, fuck you. I'm going to go vote for Trump. Whatever.
You guys are bad, mean people.
These horrible,
I'm going to go vote for someone you don't like.
Mean activists are trying. They've pushed me to become a Nazi.
You pushed me away. Look at what you did.
Yeah, were some really mean activists who could have been nicer. It's also really understandable why when you're being an activist, sometimes you get like just mad at people and you want to be a bit snippy and be kind of an asshole.
Some of these mean activists too, they fucking rock, man. They're cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Especially if you're a bit receptive to whatever thing they said, then they're like, oh my God, they're so relieved that you're not like, fuck you, you're a horrible person. You're like, oh shit, my bad. Or like, okay. Like, yeah, these horrible activist people who's the meanest people on earth or whatever, like if you show a bit of listening to what they said to you, they're, you know, usually pretty fine and chill and happy to talk to someone who isn't treating them like the source of all the problems in the world that they're actually trying to fix. So yeah, like feels looser, feels like the vibe is better, feels like you can joke around with it a bit more, feels like more people understand the boundaries on some of these kind of things and can be like, oh yeah, yeah, no, it's actually, you shouldn't vary in how often you ask people where they're really from based on their visible racial characteristics, because like, are white people really from here more so than Asian people or brown people or whatever? Like, no, it's weird.
Yeah, if you just have that insatiable curiosity that you need to know people's countries of origin from a familial sense, then you can create a way to ask that question that feels natural and is respectful of the fact that it's But it becoming a social norm to casually ask that of people who are like racialized.
Yeah. And the implication of really from is like, oh, I would have accepted that you're from here if you looked like me. But if you don't look like me, then you must really be from somewhere else.
Yeah. It's got weird shit under it.
I feel like, yeah, now so many more people would just be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I get why that's a weird thing. Yeah. You probably shouldn't do that. And we can all move on. I don't feel attacked that you pointed out that I did something kind of weird here.
Yeah, generally, my personal strategy around this kind of stuff is that I would only ask about it if it were imminently relevant in some way. And my general experience is that people will tell you where their family's from, what their parents are like, what their childhood was like, what they've seen in their life. You know, like you're hanging out with someone, you find out which African country, which of their grandparents came from, et cetera. Shit comes up. It's not...
Yeah. So if you're already having a conversation where you're asking where someone's from, like this is a get to know you kind of conversation at this point. Yeah. There's like plenty of ways that information comes out if you're super curious.
If you're the curious type.
Just be like, hey, you know, yeah, my grandparents came here from Germany in the 50s. I heard a lot of German in the house speaking growing up. How about you? What is your life like? It's become more woke 1.0 has become a basis of common sense that people are comfortable with. Yeah. And now we can build on top of it. And the bits of code that were not working very well, obviously like 2.0, you're going to prune some little dead ends off or whatever. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And you're going to develop further. You're going to structure, you're going to put on new layers. You're going to expedite, retain the functions of the earlier layers, optimize. You're going to innovate on top of that. And that's exactly what we're seeking out to do as a community right now. I think part of what we're trying to do in Woke 2.0 is to connect them all explicitly. You know, like we've been collecting these different causes and analyses, historical narratives, and so on as a community, building up our knowledge of the context, the stakes of like entwined ecological, economic power crises that often manifest through identity prisons created by the elite for the purposes of dividing us and so on. Like everyone kind of knows that. And a lot of us really know that.
Yeah.
And so the goal, I think part of the goal of Woke 2.0, in addition to like being chill, playing it cool, and knowing that you're not a bad person on some fundamental level, and knowing that no one's really going to be that mad at you. Oh, that basis of what we're trying to do is bring them all together and connect them all and have a theory of universal liberation. And then also within that, build practical, non-competitive, spontaneous cooperation towards bringing those ends to pass in a way that's irreverent and fun, that's respectful of identity and history, that's respectful of interpersonal relationships and like our responsibility to care for trauma, and also, at the risk of sounding 1.0, confront our privilege.
Yeah, cooperate. Yeah, I was just thinking about one of the major predictions or criticisms of Woke 1.0 from like the intellectual elite, or I'm thinking of like Jordan Peterson specifically, like the intellectual dark web people, was that they created this sort of Hobbesian realm of warring identities where everybody's fighting to be the most oppressed, and there's this oppression Olympics.
I encountered oppression Olympics as a negative term from a woke person in like 2011 or 2012. So this is not...
Yeah, it was an internal critique.
That was that being worked on during the launch.
Exactly.
It was a known bug.
Yeah, at the time. I remember in a very early episode, I watched some video of a feminist talking, and I told you about it. And I was like, she started off her speech by being like, oh, I don't want to talk over this person, or I don't want to seem like I'm doing this, like with all these caveats, and explaining to you that as I was watching it, at first I was like, having like a cringe reaction. I don't think I used that term at the time. But yeah. Then eventually I was like,
turned off by the vibe. It was just too self-conscious and self-erasing. And I think part of the problem with that is that like you're seeing people not respect their own dignity when they're self-erasing so much and being like, oh, I'm a man and blah, 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 or whatever. And it's like, there's a time for that. And there's like a truth to that analysis. But when you're so self-erasing and so undermining your own dignity as a bystander, it's so hard to deal with. And I respect the theory and analysis behind it. And I took the thrust of what you were saying about this video.
Yeah, I feel like I wasn't even thinking of it in terms of self-erasing, but just in terms of like, why do you need to say all this stuff? Like, who cares? I think that was like my initial was right.
It was even less woke than what I was
saying. Yeah, yeah. But as I was watching it, I was trying to give it a chance because I was like, you know, I'm open-minded to all things. I just got this sense that this person was very sincere and like connecting with the genuine desire to interact with other people in a way that doesn't imply something without thinking about what they're implying. And, you know, it partially would come from this speaker, I'm sure, having some of his woke 1.0 uncertainties and being like, no, you guys, like, I'm serious. I don't want to speak. I don't want to do this and that.
Like, person was like all their tendons and muscles had this layer of, they weren't ready to dance. They were just like, like all these, I mean, God bless them. And they're amazing. And they played a part in your journey into deeper and deeper into wokeness. And that's an important.
Yeah. So I think these tensions of different groups of people who have slightly different but overlapping interests in the liberation of all people, finding out how to come into more of a coalition with one another and fight for this universal movement for liberation. You know, the negative conservative prediction was that it's just going to descend into a oppression Olympics where they destroy one another and destroy all of us.
Yeah, but like, decide whether it's worse to be Chinese or disabled once and for all.
What actually seems to be emerging from it is the realization of that impulse to figure out how to interact with each other in a way that this woman who was talking was expressing, where we're not stepping on each other's toes, where we kind of get what each other are going through, not in a full way, but in like we get a lot of the hot flashpoints and we can avoid them and we can move around in the space and we can actually work together now. So what has emerged from it is more cooperation than this sort of destructive competing and completely falling apart. There's been a lot of falling apart at different times, but those are learning experiences and there will be more learning experiences as we move on. I don't know, just thinking about some of the conservative attacks along those lines where they're trying to like stoke oppression Olympics, like, don't you know Hamas is homophobic, or Mamdani being both called hyper woke, but also being called like the Ayatollah. Well, which is he like a super woke, going to trans the kids, or is he bringing in Sharia law?
Whichever makes you poor people fight. It's up to you.
And it's like neither of those. He's just like, oh yeah, obviously trans rights, gay rights. We shouldn't do a genocide, but also we need housing. We need to hold landlords to account. We need to tax the rich to pay for services for people, free buses, being able to focus on those political fundamentals, the material interests of economic oppression while affirming, yes, we shouldn't be Islamophobic, we shouldn't be homophobic, we shouldn't be sexist, we shouldn't be any of these things. And it all just works together because the goal is the liberation of everybody. It's actually not all these competing groups who have to tear each other down to come out on top. It's that through the structure of wokeness and the structure of understanding intersectionality, we've figured out that the liberation of one and the liberation of all are tied together, and we're struggling through a way to realize it. And woke 2.0 is next step in that, the next stage of evolution.
Until like eventually, we can have woke final, and this is like woke final underscore final.
Woke final underscore final 4.5 woke, and then there's like woke X after that when you need a rebrand.
Yeah. And then eventually after woke 15 or whatever, like woke triple X, and then you start at woke one and you go up to woke five, and then eventually it's just like woke. And then
it probably would even change names by then.
Yeah,
we'll super get woke. To like
something even beyond our perceptions. Mm-hmm. Up to you, the people of the future. We trust you to keep on carrying this righteous flame. So yeah, I've never suggested this before, but it might be funny this time. I need to go home to my beloved toddler and baby based on the time of day it is. Otherwise, I'm going to get stuck in traffic. But I'd be happy to finish the episode on the phone recording me with shitty audio driving home at the end of the episode.
Sure. Yeah.
Kind of interested in it. Can you get set up for that?
Yeah. Or you can record your call, right?
I can record the call. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Let's do that.
I forgot I parked my car a little ways away, so I'm just walking down the sunny street.
Beautiful sunny Vancouver. They're trying to stoke these oppression Olympics flames because they see it as woke one's weakness, but it's not really working, and like, people aren't buying it. And you can make fun of queers for Palestine or whatever, but like, everybody who has a basis in woke one knows that it's just true that no matter how homophobic people in Palestine are, they shouldn't be genocided, and their liberation isn't in conflict with ours. And they're scared of everybody working together. So they're trying to picket things, but it's not working.
Yeah, I know. It comes as no surprise that there would be a lot of queer people who are in solidarity with Palestine. If you've got your woke one just in basics, it's not a surprise. It wouldn't be a surprise at all. Yeah. I thought we were supposed to be against cancel culture. What, now you're going to find some examples of people in Palestine who are homophobic, or leaders from Palestine who are homophobic, and now we're just going to cancel them and fucking say that they're somehow less than or whatever, say they're not invited to parties anymore culturally because of their misdeeds against wokeness. So then it's okay for them to be subject to a brutal military campaign that affects civilian life in high numbers. What kind of over the top, wild cancel culture is that? If someone's homophobic in a foreign country, their children can be bombed to death? That's way beyond the bluest hair. That's way beyond the bluest hair's wettest dreams.
Yeah, no, totally.
If you don't guess my pronoun, I'm going to obliterate your family's home with a drone is never something any blue hair I ever interacted with said.
You know, if tomorrow Israel and Palestine from the river to the sea became a single democratic state where everybody had equal rights and they began working all that out, I would be glad to debate any homophobic Palestinians who think that the laws should be homophobic or something. Or that's such a different reaction than like, yeah, they deserve to die for it. It's like the weird conservative misunderstanding, like, oh, they want to kill us for being homophobic. Why don't they want to kill the Palestinians for being homophobic? It's like, well, actually, we don't want to kill either of you. We just want everybody to be free, and we want you to not be homophobic and them not to be, but you can do more than one thing at a time.
Yeah, let's walk and chew gum, as they say.
And by being in solidarity with them, I'm sure there's at least one Palestinian person who's heard about Queers for Palestine and been like, hey, you know, they're supporting us. Maybe, you know, I'm not saying it's a huge thing or whatever, but I bet there's like a good effect from that, even if it's small, in terms of there being less homophobia in Palestine.
Yeah, it's a lot like when people say stuff like, we shouldn't help refugees until we help our own first, you know, until we help the homeless. And on one front, it's like, yay. So you agree with us, we should end homelessness. But on the other front, this is only coming up as part of a weaponized argument against something. This type of stuff, maybe that would work on a naive, baby-faced 1.0 cadet. But in woke 2.0, you're dealing with veterans. We've seen it all before. Your old tricks won't work anymore, old man. We're invested in universal human liberation, brother. In the same way that I'm not a huge prick to a Trump supporter that I meet, despite a very likelihood that my honest analysis is this person may be participating in perpetuating narratives with a strong historical basis, leading to like pain and destruction around them in ways that are invisible to them because of their privilege. For that same reason, I would stand up for anyone around the world, regardless of their position, but we should also be careful to specify that, like, there is no particular problem of homophobia in Palestine compared to the rest of the planet Earth.
Oh, it's so non-homophobic in America. Whatever the relative scales of it are, homophobia is like a global problem, and pliability of homophobia is true everywhere. Even if you have polls showing it's worse there or whatever, people can hear arguments and change. And there's queer people in Palestine who also deserve not to die and who deserve the support of the international queer community in their own liberation movements that are happening everywhere around the world already. Yeah, the idea that, like, oh, brown people homophobic is conservatives using their racism and using unconscious racism to, like, project, like, oh, yeah, they all must be these super homophobic Muslim people that I imagine in my nightmares.
Nice try, fucking monocle man, monocle billionaire, piece of shit. We have this little title. Yeah. It says called intersectionality. Have you ever made fun of it on Twitter? It protects us against these things.
Find the most homophobic person in Palestine right now. I don't think they deserve to be bombed for that. And if they'll never change their mind as long as they live, I don't think they deserve to have their life viewed as expendable because it conflicts with the goal of a settler colonialist ethnostate. Yeah, like it's my desire for their liberation isn't contingent on their having those same values towards me. When I'm talking about total human liberation of everyone, it includes everyone.
Another thing that I'm thinking about Woke 1.0 and where its folly is, I think the way that Woke 1.0 interacted with institutions. So there was like a circuit of jobs in nonprofits and in governments that had to do with applied wokeness through like an HR lens or through a public policy lens or a corporate governance lens or whatever like that. And there was kind of like this sphere of people whose monetary lives and futures, urban professionals, office workers primarily,
yeah,
who their job was to be woke professionally. And that brought in some conflicts of interest and also some amplification concerns of the grassroots versus the economic elite of the woke sphere. That caused a lot of shit. One of the things that caused for this, a good example of it, this is, I feel a little bit edgy saying this, but I think we can accept, I think we're ready. In Canada, a lot of people will say 2SLGBTQIA+. And that is the full LGBT approved.
Yeah, it's like the government of Canada's current whatever guideline, whatever.
Exactly. So in order to get grants funding in Canada that relate to social justice issues, people use the government term. And the term itself came from the grassroots. I think there was a conference in Winnipeg it was coined, putting Two-Spirit at the front to recognize Indigenous claims to Canadian land. So important circle, by the way, on Woke 2.0. But it becoming like a formalized term used the nonprofit industrial complex. It, to me, like I can recite it from heart as you just heard, but I just think, practically speaking, that's too many letters to teach people. Our shorthand term for like the queer and trans community should probably not have any numbers in it. I don't mean that in an anti-woke way. I just mean that in like, how are we going to talk in our day-to-day lives? Saying that out loud is, it's like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It's not, you got to train your 2SLGBTQIA+.
Syllable-wise, horrible. Visually, it is a jumble. You have to explain what it all means. It's not great. There was a meme online recently from a speaker. She put missing and murdered Indigenous women in front of that acronym. So it was MMIW2SLGBTQIA+. And that was like a few months ago, but I still am seeing people in comments be like, oh, isn't it MMIW2SLGBTQIA+ now? Trying to do the did you assume my gender thing. I've always liked queer. It doesn't quite cover everything, but it is one syllable, which is great. I also liked gender and sexual minorities, but nobody uses that one. But GSM really does kind of cover that whole alphabet soup, including asexual people and trans people. And
I like also the plus. Like I thought people invented the plus to stop adding new letters and recognize like, and it's only there's only more letters from here, folks.
Like, yeah, but the plus introduces kind of like a hierarchy, but so does listing all the letters in an order. You know, why we move 2S to the front is like to show respect for this thing. But like Do asexual people feel like crap because they're always placed at the end of the IA plus? It's never A up front.
They add questioning to it. I mentioned this last episode, but questioning, that's a whole nother letter for questioning. Just feels like really respecting the questioning community to a degree that they're not ready for, you know? Questioning community, they're not like, oh man, I'm all the way at the back. They're like, what, me?
Yeah. They're like, am I part of this group? Do I have to be part of this group just because I'm questioning whether I'm part of this group? Like, it's a little bit force teamy.
What a man, question and peace over here. I don't need to be harassed down by it being new letter. You guys worked hard for those letters. I don't need one.
Maybe that's what questioning people need, is to be welcomed in and told there are real issues that questioning people face. It can be difficult to talk about being questioning. It can feel very self-conscious. You could be like, oh, if I say I'm one thing and then say I'm something else later, are people going to accuse me of, you know, there's stuff to be talked about with the questioning community. I don't know if I've ever heard that term before, but they're worthwhile too. But yeah, the corporate stuff, those mixed motivations resulted in some weird things sometimes. Sometimes they'd like leak those teacher guidebooks that would say things like, in so many words, black kids aren't as good at math unless you do it like this, or that. There's versions of it that make sense, and there's versions of it that came off like very kind of weird. And that was a big issue with a lot of the corporate stuff. Take white fragility. It came from Robin DiAngelo, who was like a very corporate-y kind of woke person. The concept behind it is true, that talking about race makes white people uncomfortable. It probably wasn't her term. I don't know where the term came from, probably activists. But like the way it propagated into the culture from her book and from that sort of PR culture didn't go over well, partially because there was this tinge of weirdness to it, partially because the confrontational style of parts of it, it kind of fit into some of the stereotypes that are true about aspects of woke 1.0. And white fragility is like a real force in the world, and understanding it is useful both like to understand your own reactions to things, but to understand broader political reactions to things that don't make sense, unless you're like, oh, they're just really uncomfortable that race was being talked about or race was being taken into account here, because you didn't have to think about it before, and it benefits you not to think about it because the system benefits white people. So there's this reaction that a lot of white people have. There's a real good point there, but like, take what works and like, not be so weird about it. But corporate PR stuff does that to everything.
The corporate PR stuff, it could highlight some of the bad aspects of things or like reify them. And I think the issue with white fragility as a concept is that it risks essentialism in talking about some fragility that's rooted in some sort of like unshakable whiteness that people who have light skin have, and in that way kind of reifying essentialism that mirrors or extends on the essentialism of racist ideology, and even saying like the same words without the right caveats or the right context because either you're talking about a system and tendencies that emerge from those systems in individuals, and then you're being very technical and correct in a way that you can recognize people's both responsibility and relative lack of agency at the same time. Whereas like, I feel like what white fragility is very similar to fragility of human beings in general. Like it's human fragility in a particular form and in a particular way that correlates with this social institution of whiteness, which is a ideology of separating people into categories based on the pigmentation of their skin that only has a very passing resemblance to the reality of, like, say, ethnicity and the development of genetic subgroupings of humanity that cluster around different features or whatever.
It's kind of like toxic masculinity, in that there's like an essentialist read of it that like you're saying masculinity is toxic. And then there's the more social read of, oh, this is a phenomenon rooted in a particular history certain groups are reacting certain ways in certain situations, not because of any essential characteristic, but because of contingent historical factors.
Yeah, and I think the essentialism stuff, pretty toxic to like perceptions, but I think it's also just analytically off mark. I think like analyzing correctly the reality of the violent system that we find ourselves in, and depending on our luck and circumstance, playing different roles. I just got hung up on the word luck, feeling like I said something imperfect, but we'll leave it in on principle. We get this dice roll that gives us different contexts that we come up in this world. And then basically what Woke 2.0 says, that our job is to collectively play our role within changing that for the goodness, for the success of humankind universally. Yeah, there'll be some hiccups along the way. People are going to use the wrong fork sometimes. So we keep our eye on the prize, look at the big picture, and think about how we could transform and liberate society and participate to liberating that society by having as liberated social relationships as possible, including respecting other people, where other people are coming from, in a way that is like groovy and copacetic to be around and not getting caught up in some weird ass shit, like asking people who are not white where they're from as a casual form of conversation, but not asking that of people who are white. I guess you could say, hey, why don't you be cool? We're just having fun over here, or something like that. But I think it's pretty reasonable for people to like notice that and be like, hey, this is actually starting to feel like I'm being treated inconsistent with my peers on the basis of the color of my skin. And that makes me feel harmed. Like I'm not getting something I deserve. And what can you say to that except, huh, that's a good point. I don't want to treat people differently based on the color of their skin. In fact, I'm proud to tell everyone I'm not racist if it ever came up. I don't know. Last time I told someone I'm not racist, though. I try to show and not tell on these things as much as I can. So
I don't know when I've said that last either. Maybe I should say it just to get back in the practice. You know, I'm not racist.
Yeah, we should all practice that. Practice at home if you're alone. Just got to remind yourself. Yeah. Otherwise,
and my understanding of what it means to not be racist has broadened to include graciously being like, oh shit, yeah, no, I'll try not to do that if someone mentions something that I had never considered might have a racial tinge to it before. We've worked through a lot of the feelings. Woke 1.0, there's been a lot of feelings. There's going to be a lot more feelings, but we've worked through a lot together. And I think we've come out stronger for it, you know? It's not that all woke men have stopped hogging the conversations from women. It's not that all woke white people have stopped being weird about race. It's not that all woke straight people never say some weird shit, any of those things. But we all just are like, oh yeah, okay, sure, yeah, sorry about that. And we can move on and work together despite not being perfect.
Yeah, I really feel like we can just, across all of these intersections, and by checking our privilege, we can end oppression, and we can, I was trying to think of what are the other triggering words
right
1.9, I'm trying to use them all.
Yeah,
but the heart of it is, do you want to be free? Do you want to live in a free society? And that is what the original definition, like the original place that wokeness came from in like African-American vernacular English, is like awareness of your surroundings. Like staying woke is staying awake to what is happening around you and understanding what the threats are. And from that, being able to take educated and aware steps towards taking care of yourself and others and being free from things that want to make you unfree. So that's a slight paraphrase there, but the core idea is like staying awake to your surroundings, staying awake to threats, situational awareness, and so on. Mm-hmm. That's before it was paraded around as the new controversy, the kids getting poked. I think the genesis of it, I think, is also important too, as we expand and we grow on Woke 2.0 and we think about how do we achieve this liberation? How do we make people free? How do we make everyone free? Part of that is being aware of the threats. And part of it, like all of these layers of analysis are ways of being aware of threats. It's not just about using the right forks or whatever. It's not, ableism isn't primarily an interpersonal problem, although it might be worth discussing and hashing out how language could be alienating or make people feel bad. But like ableism is primarily a systemic problem of a society that's not structured around human need and care, but is instead structured around profit and power. So situational awareness and wokeness when it comes to ableism actually relates to large external structures in society that can be challenged and transformed. It's more than just ramps or bars in the bathroom. It's more than handicap stalls. All those things are useful and valuable and part of it. But it's also like, it's just really fundamentally about, does our society take care of people and give them what they need, give them access to what they need? As long as the answer to that question is no, then the problem of ableism is unresolved, no matter how much you can speak correctly and use the right metaphorical fork and know the latest compound words. I'm not saying that all those things to shit on them either. But part of the analytical space that we're in with Woke 2.0 is it's all of them are kind of like that. When you start digging into what is racism, where does racism come from? What is this idea of race? Where does it come from? How does it affect people? What is the impact of racism on my life? Some people might call that the doing the work of unpacking your privilege or something like that, although I personally probably would not. But once you dig into it, you start to realize there's something outside of me that puts space between me and people in my life. There's something that is imposed on both me and how I'm perceived as a person who's granted this insider status of white within a society with a racial hierarchy and its ideology. And it means that I lose out on opportunities to love people around me and to be loved by them. And it makes it harder for me to know my neighbors and really know my neighbors and recognizing some of these patterns of microaggressions that people are pointed out, because your whole life as a good liberal kid or whatever is like, I'm not racist, that we don't do the racist things, we don't treat people wrong. And you recognize like, oh, that is something that I was doing based on an unconscious context in a way that wasn't maliciously motivated, but would also contribute to people being treated differently based on their race or gender or status, et cetera, instead of feeling guilt and asking, am I a bad person? Am I perceived as a bad person? Is this person I'm talking to the type of person that would perceive me as a bad person? And all those sort of like unconscious nonverbal spirals that can emerge out of that. When you look into the shit and you think about like, okay, the idea of race was invented at a time when there was cross-race solidarity against the fucking ruling elite in the Americas. And like the whole history of race is the rich and powerful using the construct of race to divide people. And I can recognize places in my life that whether maybe you feel guilty about it, but maybe you mourn it. I feel like that's how I feel about it. When it comes to racism, I just mourn. I mourn what I did not get in my life and my childhood that related to knowing each other as a result of this. And I don't know. I feel emotional today. I mourn. I do like just racism has taken something so profound from white people, and it's not like everyone gets it equally bad or something. It's not about oppression Olympics anyways, as we previously covered. But there's something so profound taken from you with all of these systems, regardless of your status within them. And the slaveholder is also dehumanized, not in the same way and not in a...
to the same degree. Yeah.
It's not that they both have it bad, but to come up in a slaveholding society and be raised by slaveholding parents and inherit your first slave, that is so violent and fucked up and twisted as a way to get into life. The counterfactual society where people are living like free and equal alongside each other and everyone's value is respected is just, there's a profound loss there for everyone. And also often you can track specific rich assholes who bankrolled it. So I think that's Woke 2.0.
Yeah, we're coming together. It's getting harder for them to hide what they're doing because there is more transparency and communication in the world. The internet hasn't been perfect or anything, but a lot of Woke 1.0 was facilitated by different groups being able to come together, through the academic context, but that academic stuff mixing with real world in a way that rarely happened, I think, in like earlier iterations of these political theories that were very much outside of culture a lot of the time, like what average people were talking about. The internet's really like brought it all up and to the surface. And yeah, my optimistic take is that like the more everybody understands how we're all brought down by all of these systems of oppression, the more it just becomes obvious what we need to do. And the more it just becomes obvious what we need to do, the more people there are who just are like, okay, well, let's get down to doing it, right? Like we can see more paths emerging now because of what we've learned and what's happened and where we're at culturally and technologically.
I agree. And that's all the time we have because I'm at home to my beautiful children and I got to go inside now. But it was wonderful talking to you and wonderful talking to everyone. And support the show on Patreon. We love you.
Yeah, we love you. Goodbye.